Don't be the person that's always talking about how great of a football player you were in high school 35 years ago. Don't be the person who talks about how much more freedom you experienced before you were married. Don't be the person who looks back and just talks about all the joy that you had in your house when your kids were little. Don't be the person that just ruminates all the time on what life was like before COVID-19. Wisdom comes when you look forward.
This is Opening the Bible with Dr. Nick Gatzke, Senior Pastor of Old North Church in Canfield, Ohio. I'm your host, Brian Dolan. Today, Pastor Nick continues in a series called The Meaningful Life, right out of the book of Ecclesiastes. Today, part one of a message titled, The End is in Sight. But before we get to the end, Pastor, let's go way back to like 20-year-old Pastor Nick. What was he like, huh?
20-year-old Pastor Nick was a college student that was learning how to study hard. Probably hadn't started studying that hard just yet.
Too much fun, huh?
Oh, yeah. Living in downtown Chicago, the freedom of being out of your parents' home and exploring all those things. And in all honesty, trying to figure out what it meant to be faithful to the Lord in the midst of all that.
So with that in mind, do you miss the good old days?
No, I really don't. I look back on those days with fondness, but I wouldn't go back if I had the choice. I think the Lord has me where he has me in this season of life, and I'm quite happy for it.
And yet some people spend a whole lot of time in those days, right? Looking back. And this particular part of Ecclesiastes deals with that issue.
It sure does. You've met a lot of people, Brian. I'm sure many of our listeners have as well. People who have had their expectations for how their life would turn out not be met. And as a result, they look back to the glory days. And instead of looking forward, they spend so much of their time reminiscing on the way things used to be. But that is not wisdom, says the writer of Ecclesiastes. The wise person actually looks in the other direction, and that's where we get to here in chapter 7.
Well, let's find out more of that wisdom from Pastor Nick in part one of a message titled, The End is in Sight.
I think we all know that sometimes we go through life and we just can't figure out which way is up and why things are happening the way that they are. Those times in life when you just have to sit back and you say, huh, I didn't see that coming. And sometimes those surprises are pleasant, and sometimes those surprises are difficult. And as we navigate life, King Solomon shows us the way of wisdom, and he helps us to find meaning in these happenings of life. In Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 12, in the passage immediately preceding our passage for today, Solomon writes, "For who knows what is good for man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun?" The point that Solomon is getting at is that so often when we go through life and we try to evaluate the things that are happening, we evaluate them from a limited position or a limited understanding because we don't ultimately know what is best for us. But God does. In these times of confusion, however, when we don't know what's best for us and we don't understand what's happening, Solomon points us to the fact that there are some better ways to approach those situations and some worse ways. We all want the better ways. We want better in every area of our life. If you're a student, you want better grades. You want better food. You want better relationships. You want a better life. And here in Ecclesiastes 7, Solomon shows us the better way forward. And so follow with me as I read from Ecclesiastes 7, starting at verse 1 through 18. This is what Solomon writes. He says, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise and to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of the thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fools. This is also vanity. Surely oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning. And the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, an advantage to those who see the sun. For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, and in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. In my vain life, I have seen everything. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not overly righteous, and do not make yourself too wise, for why should you destroy yourself? Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you should take hold of this, and that from that withhold not your hand, for the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Ecclesiastes is interesting because in this book of wisdom, there are a variety of different forms of literature, and we've seen that already. Here in Ecclesiastes 7, Solomon gives us a string of proverbs that are arranged in a particular way. And when you understand how he arranges these proverbs, it helps us understand the point that he's trying to get to, a point that helps us to find meaning in the uncertainty of life. And it begins in verse 1 with what we might call the headline. You know what a headline is in a newspaper. It's the thing that gets your attention and drives to the content beneath it. The headline of chapter 7 is found in verse 1. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. It's true. A good name, a good reputation is important in this life. You can put on precious ointment or a nice perfume with a few squirts of a bottle, and it will add to how people perceive you. Cheap cologne or cheap perfume often smells bad, but with a few squirts of some expensive perfume, those you come in contact with will experience something quite pleasant. But you cannot so quickly put on a good name. A good name is something that is built over time. It's built over many interactions. It can't be faked. It can't be purchased. A good name comes from a person with good character. The Hebrew here in Ecclesiastes 7:1 has a little bit of a wordplay for us that's lost in translation, and it's something like this. Fair fame is better than fine perfume. It sounds like a proverb worth remembering. Fair fame is better than fine perfume. Fine perfume is a valuable commodity in the ancient world, but a good name is even more valuable. I wonder what people think when they hear your name. Do they think of integrity, or do they lean toward thinking of someone that they're not quite so sure they can trust? When people hear your name, do they think of kindness or do they think of harshness? Do they think of someone who's cheerful or someone who is very critical in their spirit? When people hear your name, do they think of someone who's honest Or do they think of someone who's prone to exaggeration? Fair fame is better than fine perfume. But the second part of the headline makes us pause a little bit, doesn't it? The first part makes sense. But to say that the day of death is better than the day of birth, that's the opposite of what we would normally assume. And the fact that these two parts are coupled together in the same verse tells us in some way they're related to each other. Verses 2 through 7 help us to understand why considering our death is actually good for us. Because we learn something from death as we look back on life. Look at verse 2. Solomon says, it's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. So he creates a picture of two houses, a house that's feasting or a party, a house that's mourning because somebody has died. And in the ancient world, it's common to go and visit somebody in the house of mourning when a friend or a family member has passed and grieve together, sometimes even for days. And he says that this activity of going to the house of mourning is more beneficial to us than the party, because it makes us consider the death of our loved one. And when we do, we learn something. We learn something that we don't learn when we're at a party. We learn something that we don't learn even when we're celebrating the birth of a baby. Because birth shows us the potential of a life. But death shows us the fulfillment of a life that is well lived. Death is an evangelist. We're forced to measure our own mortality. And in a time when people want to deny that death is knocking at the door, this is a very culturally relevant message for today. People spend thousands of dollars to keep their pets alive for just a couple more years, but they all die. Golf rising star Bryson DeChambeau gave his personal thoughts on skirting death. Maybe you heard it. He was talking about and interviewed about his fairly intense regimen of food and drink, and he's found the perfect pH balance in the water that he drinks and a variety of other things. And then he said, I'm always trying to add more value to my life in general. I mean, my goal is to live to 130 or 140. And I really think that's possible now with today's technology. I think somebody's going to do it in the next 30 or 40 years. I want humans to be better, to live to 130 or 140. The ambition of skirting death. And that's not to mention all of the millions upon millions of dollars that people have invested and are continuing to invest in actually making humankind immortal in their lifespan. But rather than avoid death, Solomon says that we should learn from it. And the reason why is in verse 3. Look at it with me. He says that the wisdom of death gives us gladness in life. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face, the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. One of the things that we learn from grieving and from death is that the wisdom gained by observing the lives of those who have passed actually serves to bring gladness to our own life. When you can look at the life of someone who has lived and fulfilled their life, and you do likewise, things go better for you. Leonardo da Vinci once said, as a well-spent day brings happy sleep, so a life well-used brings happy death. Considering death helps point us to what's the most important in life. And for the believer in Jesus, of course, we know that the other thing that we learn from death is that death is the entrance into a glorious inheritance, that you need not fear, brother, You need not fear, sister, because death brings us into glory. The Apostle Paul expresses this. He says that he can't decide which one's better. In Philippians chapter 1, life or death. He says, I'm hard-pressed between the two because to live is Christ, but to die is gain. For Christians, death is the entrance into glory. That's why George MacDonald writes, how strange this fear of death is. We are never frightened at the sunset. Or C.S. Lewis, who writes, if we really think that home is elsewhere and that this life is a wandering from home, why should we not look forward to the arrival? Or the Apostle Paul again in 1 Corinthians 15, 55 through 57 says, oh death, where is your victory? Oh death, where is your sting? The sting of death is sin and the power of sin is in the law. But thanks be to God who gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. So death teaches us. Considering death brings gladness into our hearts as we learn. Death is the entrance into glory. Better is the day of death, Solomon says, than the day of birth. Looking ahead, we see another better that keeps us in this same line of thinking. Look at verse 5 with me. Verse 5 gives another aspect of wisdom in this life and the ability to receive correction. It says, it is better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. I wonder how you receive correction, how you receive the rebuke of the wise. Is it natural for you to hear correction and instinctually reject it, to defend yourself from it, to slander the giver of correction? Or do you receive it? Do you consider it? Do you change because of it? Death provides the ultimate correction, but between today and that day, God places in our lives people and relationships that continue to help us to learn, to grow, and this even happens through correction for the sake of a better life. Now I want to pause right here and just notice with me that he is not talking about the person who is willing to give the rebuke. We have an overabundance of people who are willing to correct other people. Some of them wise, some of them not so wise. He's talking about how do you receive correction or rebuke. When legitimate correction is given, how do you respond? Solomon says that the sting of correction is better than the laughing approval of fools. I can think of many times through life when the sting of correction ended up being the catalyst for meaningful change. Whether the rebuke comes from a parent who just wants the best for their child. Or a seminary professor, in my case, who in a back classroom in a dark hallway shredded apart a sermon in front of the whole class because he wanted me to be better. Or the piercing glance of my wife after some sharp words to our children because I was tired or irritable. Perhaps the hardest correction comes from the words of a friend, a loved one, after behaving in a manner that's unbecoming. How do you receive correction like that? I remember learning the lessons of correction the hard way from my high school basketball coach. He was a man who taught, a man who yelled, a man who corrected. And my thin skin had to grow thicker if I was going to survive. And I learned over the course of time that his correction was not because he didn't like me, and it wasn't because he didn't think I was good. His correction was based on the fact that he wanted even more for me. He wanted better, and he knew that it was possible. And I still see his face and sometimes even hear his voice when I receive the words of corrections from friends or colleagues or my wife or my enemies. That man, in many ways, gave me a pearl. He trained me for life because correction is for our good. We all receive correction when we're young and stupid. But how do you receive it when you grow older and you're still stupid? If you can't receive correction, you will not grow. That's just the sum total of it. You won't grow in your skills. You won't grow in your relationships. You will not grow in godliness. Being corrected by a wise person is better than being surrounded by the lighthearted nature of foolish people. That's a way to have a better life. Well, at verse 8, a new section of the string of Proverbs begins, and it sounds a whole lot like the first. Look at verse 8 with me. We see that the end is better than the beginning. He says, better is the end of a thing than its beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. So when we take a big step back and we look at the chapter as a whole, we see two starting points for considering life here in verse 8. The end, consider life from the end of the thing, or consider life from the beginning of the thing. And we see a bit of similarity between verses 1 and 2. Two homes, two starting points, death and birth, the end and the beginning. And we start to see how these things relate to each other, and we get closer to the main point. And it's this: the wise person lives in light of the end. That's what Solomon's trying to get to, that the wise person lives in light of the end. The end of our days gives us the opportunity to pause and to go back and to consider all that we've learned along the way. But in the second half of the string of Proverbs, he mirrors the first in the fact that he goes back into the notion of character development. That when you live in light of the end, this means something for your character right now. And so verse 8, he says immediately the end is better than the beginning. And then he starts to talk about patience and pride. That because you live in light of the end, we grow in patience, verse 8 says. Or verse 9, because we consider the end, we are not quick to anger. Or verse 10, wisdom is, in considering the end, does not have us continue to look backward on life for the days that have gone by. Verse 10 rings true, doesn't it? Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Don't be the person that's always talking about how great of a football player you were in high school 35 years ago. Don't be the person who talks about how much more freedom you experienced before you were married. Don't be the person who looks back and just talks about all the joy that you had in your house when your kids were little. Don't be the person that just ruminates all the time on what life was like before COVID-19. Now, it's one thing to reminisce fondly about days gone by, but it's another thing to live in the past. And wisdom is not found in living in the past. Wisdom comes when you look forward. The wise person lives in light of the end. And the close of the chapter tells us that when you do that, it informs how you live in the present. Look at verse 13 with me. It's no surprise that there are plenty of things in life that we don't like. There are things that cause us difficulty, anguish, suffering. There are things in which we say, this isn't fair, or God, why are you doing this? How could you allow this? But when we live life in light of the end, it gives us a better perspective on God. Verse 13, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? You can't straighten out the crooked that God has ordained.
That was Dr. Nick Gatzke of Old North Church in Canfield, Ohio. And Pastor, I'm going to bring you back into our final portion of the program today, as I want to talk a bit about love for a moment.
As in, I think it's kind of being cheapened in today's society. You know, I love hamburgers and I love my wife. I feel like that shouldn't be the same word. We've got a great resource as a thank you this month to contributing to this ministry that really deals with love as Jesus designed it.
You know, the Bible has this command to love, and we filter that command through all of these different experiences and expressions like the ones you just mentioned. But the life of Jesus actually teaches us what it means to fulfill God's command to love him and to love each other. And Jesus perfectly illustrates that in his life in a way that we can follow.
Well, if that's interesting to you, perhaps this is the month to give to this ministry. Go to openingthebible.org, that's openingthebible.org, get your gift in, and we'll send you a thank you. It's a book by Dr. Philip Ryken called Loving the Way Jesus Loves. Opening the Bible is a teaching ministry of and is sponsored by Old North Church of Canfield, Ohio.